Hello, welcome to episode 9 of Sacred Cheese of Life. We have slightly adverse recording conditions because it's hot, so the window's open. The construction is done for the day, I think. But we have traffic noise, and we have Miss Barky Face, who has been having barking fits. So we'll see how it goes. Also, I feel really weird, and I'm having a medical crisis of some kind. Nobody knows what's going on. It's fine. It's probably fine, right? It's generally fine unless it's not. We'll see. All right, so today's episode is about Leverage. Leverage is a TV show that is fabulous. It contains everything I love. Here's what it contains. Found Family. Always a favorite of mine. Most of my favorite shows include Found Family of some kind. It includes rich scumbags getting what they deserve, which is bad things. They get brought down. Rich scumbags who are hurting people get brought down. I love that. I love seeing justice. It also contains competence. And competence is one of my very favorite things in the whole world. I love seeing competence. One of my other favorites is enthusiasm. So if you combine competence and enthusiasm, you're my favorite person. That's everything I love. And if it's Found Family on top of that, it's my favorite show. I have all the DVDs. I watch them all the time. I tend to listen to the commentaries when I'm feeling terrible because they make me feel like everything is okay and there's somebody in charge who has things under control. It's funny to say that because, of course, the creator said he was drinking a whole lot when he was making all those recording all those commentaries. So I'm like, what does that say about me? That I'm like, oh, good, there's a drunk person in charge. But I do feel that way. I feel like everything's going to be okay. Like every episode, obviously, things work out. It's a TV show. It's explicitly modeled on the Rockford Files and all of those 70s TV shows that I loved so much. I watched all of them growing up. I was just explaining that to a friend, actually, like all these shows that absolutely designed my brain. Like my brain is built out of these 70s TV shows. And I mean, obviously MASH is number one, but others like Barney Miller, Rockford Files, Columbo, getting into the 80s, you get Murder, She Wrote, all of these things. I mean, we watched all of them, The Jeffersons, Sanford and Son, I can't even think, Starsky and Hutch, all of them. We watched them all. There were a few that they didn't like or wouldn't countenance for some reason. Like Three's Company was off limits because it was about, I guess the guy was pretending to be gay or something. I don't know. I never got to watch it. So that was off limits. Anything with that kind of like people being sexy was off limits. Although we did watch Fantasy Island. We watched Love Boat, but I guess those were fairly tame. I don't really remember very well, but the narrative structure is in my head, and this is explicitly built on that. And so Leverage is such a joy. Leverage is five people who have different criminal skills who use them to get justice for people who have been wronged. And that's a really simple setup, right? Each of them is incredibly skilled in their own area of expertise, which gives you the wonderful structure. Each one gets to do their thing that makes the thing happen, that makes the justice occur. And they use it by getting, you know, leverage over for these people. They find ways to compel them into a corner and to get them to do the right thing. Well, not they don't get them to do the right thing. Sometimes they do, but mostly they just bring them down. They punish them. They take away whatever it was that they took. They get justice for the people they hurt. They take away the money from the wealthy person and give it to the poor person. Like, you know, there's one very early on. It might be the first episode after the pilot where there's some injured veterans who are being hurt, exploited, and they go and get all the money back and give it to the veterans hospital. And then the nice nurse doctor person is like, we can help so many people with this. And that's the fundamental basic structure of it. Like, good people are being hurt who don't deserve to be hurt. Bad people are hurting them. Take the money away from the bad people and give it to the good people. So it's a Robin Hood story. It's an old story, but it's a very good story. And the five of them become, of course, a family of a kind. And it's very satisfying interpersonal dynamics. They're all very different. They all have very different strengths. They all have very different weaknesses, which makes for very good character development and character interplay. And every episode is extremely strong. Sometimes there are overarching story arcs. Sometimes there are not. And it's fine either way. And by the time you get to the end of the series, which I've watched, I don't even know how many times, and I'm not kidding, I will put this on in the background when I can't even see it, and I'm just listening to it, because I've seen it so many times I don't need to look at it. And I will just sort of go along with it, like I'm there with it. I'm in that world. And of course, everyone loves when the bad guys get their just desserts and the good guys get what they deserve and everything works out great. So it's a fantasy. It's a revenge fantasy, but it's also a justice fantasy. Maybe that's a little on the simplistic side, but who cares? That's what we want. That's what we should get. That's what we need in the world. We need more of that. And I like seeing the good guys win. I don't have any use at all for gritty realism. Like, you can keep it. I don't want it. I don't want realism really at all. In fact, I get extremely turned off from a show or a book or a movie if it's extremely realistic. Like, I don't want it. I don't need it. We already have that. And it has a lot of problems. You don't just dream at night a rehash of everything, you know, a realistic retelling of what happened during your day. You dream of, you know, the darker, scarier side of it that turns it into a darker fantasy. Or you dream of the wonderful dreamscape of it that turns it into fantasy in a good way. Or, you know, you remix all the elements. You do things with it. You don't just retell it. And I don't know why we need to have so much gritty realism. Actually, I mean, I suppose the portrayal of gritty realism is a fiction just like everything else. It's not realistic. And this is something I could talk about for hours. A friend of mine has been talking about this too, that the world on television is not the world. It's not a realistic portrayal. Even when it claims to be realistic, is not a realistic portrayal of the actual world. In fact, it informs and causes our real world to behave certain ways that it isn't, and that it doesn't need to be because it isn't that way. You know, you get people like in the legal profession or in education or in medicine, this happens a lot in medicine, where people show up and they're like, they expect it to be a certain way because it is that way on television, and we have to go, wait, well, it's not like that, so no. You can't just, you know, you can't just barge in and be your own lawyer or, you know, expect a medical miracle overnight or any of these things. You know, the doctor is not going to come in and draw blood because doctors don't come in and draw blood. These things don't happen. They're fictions. They're a fictional reality, even in a realistic television show. Okay, so that's reality. Leverage does not claim to be reality. It's very, very peaceful for me when it's not claiming to be reality. I love it so much. Okay, so what did I want to talk about? Competence and commentaries. Competence, of course, it's in the commentaries, it's even called competence porn, because you spend a lot of time just enjoying these people being so good at what they do, and they're clearly defined skill sets that they carry out in ways that you wouldn't expect that bring about results that they need. And it's just so satisfying. I love to see it, which actually does remind me of Columbo. Columbo had that certain skill set, right? We would see a crime committed. We would see every detail of it. And then Columbo would come in and he would make the people tell him. He would figure it out, but he would make the people tell him what happened by asking questions, you know, in his bumbling, shambling kind of way, pretending he was stupid and acting like he didn't understand anything and making them feel superior, which is a method they also use on Leverage. Especially Nate will do that. He'll act really dumb and he acts really annoying a lot. He irritates people and that gets under their skin and then they're off guard, which is such a great approach. But that's just one element of competence. He can weaponize incompetence to be competent. He can do this thing that throws people off balance, and that is extremely competent to be able to manage people that way. And if you wanted to break down all the roles, I mean, if you've seen this is, you know this, but you've got Nate as the mastermind. He's the one who organizes everything and decides what's going to happen and who's going to do what and how it's all going to go down. Sophie is the grifter. She's able to manipulate people in such a profound way that they do what she wants without even realizing it. So they think they're doing what they want, but they're doing what she wants. She's incredibly skilled at it and has many, many, many different approaches and can dress different ways and be different people. She's brilliant. Then you've got Elliot, who's the hitter. So he uses violence often, but he doesn't always. Sometimes he'll pretend to be somebody he's not. And that can be very interesting when he does that. He's extremely enjoyable. He's also got incredible competence in all sorts of fields. Like, he's the one who's always saying, like, he'll hear a gun and he's like, oh, it's a this. And then everyone's like, wait, how do you, really? And he goes, it's a distinctive sound. Elliot knows a whole lot of things. just all sorts of areas of expertise. And you've got Parker, who is a thief, who can get in anywhere. She's extremely agile. She's almost a gymnast. She can, you know, go up and down the sides of buildings, no problem. She's the one who will leap off a building on a wire in a way that terrifies me just watching it. She'll go along catwalks. She's always in vents. She's in the vents. She can go steal anything. She can pick your pocket. She can take your stuff right off of you without you even noticing. She's just incredibly gifted that way and uses it now for good. All of these people use their skills for crime before, but now it's crime with good intentions. And then there's Hardison, who is just the heart of the show. He's just the sweetest. He's an incredibly gifted computer hacker is his title. So he can do anything with computers. And he does things that are, of course, impossible, but he also does things that are surprisingly possible. Like, I wish these things weren't as possible as they are. It's upsetting. Like, when you find out you can take a plane down from a laptop, if you know how to do it, that's not okay. I don't want to know that. I don't want to be on a plane now that I know that. And I suppose it takes somebody who knows how and who wants to. You have to have both of those elements, but those people are out there. I don't like it. So you learn a lot of things that you maybe wish you didn't know, but you also learn things that aren't true, so that's fun. You just get such good stories. I could list some of my favorite episodes. Okay, my favorite episodes of Leverage. You want to know my favorite episodes of my favorite show? I will tell you. Here are my favorites, in order of which ones I love best. Number one. Okay, there's 8 tied for first place, so there's that. Season 2, episode 11, The Bottle Job, my favorite. Season 1, episode 5, The Bank Shot Job. Yes, I'm reading these off a list I made because I'm prepared. Season 3, episode 11, The Rashomon Job. Season 5, episode 9, The Rundown Job. Season 5, episode 10, The Frame Up Job. Those two go together. Season 5, episode 6. These are out of order. Oh, no, they're not. They're in order of my favorites. Season 5, episode 6, The D.B. Cooper Job. Season 4, episode 13, The Girls' Night Out Job, and season 4, episode 14, The Boys' Night Out Job. And then, now we're on to number 2, because those 8 were tied for first place. Number 2, season 3, episode 3, The Inside Job. Season 3, episode 15, The Big Bang Job. Season 4, episode 1, The Long Way Down Job. My dog is making a lot of noise. Season 4, episode 6, The Carnival Job. Season 1, episodes 12 and 13, The First David Job and The Second David Job. Season 1, episode 7, The Wedding Job. Season 4, episode 18, The Last Damn Job. Season 5, episode 1, The Very Big Bird Job. Okay, not that I don't love all the rest, but those are my top 17? I think it's 17. And that's in order of how much I love them. Obviously, I love The Bottle Job the most, The Bank Job, Bank Shot Job the most, The Rashomon Job the most, The Rundown Job the most, etc. Frame Up Job is such a joy. You've got to watch it. It's like a screwball comedy. It's so good. I have to stop listing them or I will never stop. Okay. I don't even want to go into it. I don't want to ruin it. I'm not going to ruin any of the episodes. Watch the bank one and watch the whole entire run. How can you not? If you are sad, if you are hopeless, if you're feeling at loose ends, if you're a little bit lost, I don't know. It's just very, very, very comforting and satisfying. I keep using that word. It's so good to watch competence. And it's easy to forget that we all have our areas of competence. There are things we can do that other people can't do. I tend to forget this all the time about myself because I'm like, of course I can just da, da, da. And then other people look at me and they're like, how did you do that? There was a moment where I did this and I forgot about it till somebody reminded me, maybe my sister reminded me, where we were driving east and my car stopped working for whatever reason. I had a bad install of a hitch. They did it wrong. They screwed it up and it messed with the electrical system. Okay, so we stopped somewhere. I don't know why we were stopped along the road in Idaho, but the car just stopped working. And I was asleep. My sister was driving. And so I woke up. She's like, oh no, the car doesn't work. And I woke up and I was like, ugh. And I like opened the glove box, took out a fuse, replaced one fuse, and the car worked again. And it was some dumb fuse, like the fuse for the light inside the glove box or something like that. It was ridiculous. This car had so many issues by the time those people were done with it that it did not have before. But it was that kind of like just casual competence, right? That it's To me, that's nothing. Of course you do that. Of course I have an Altoids tin of fuses. People tend not to notice their own areas of expertise as much as we probably should because they just fade into the background. But it's probably worthwhile to take stock and realize how good you are at certain things and how valuable that is to other people, especially if you're like, well, I don't have any. If you're down, you know what I mean? Like, just take stock. What are you super good at that other people can't even begin to do? Oh, you can read a symphonic score and hear it in your head? Yeah, I can do that. To me, that's just normal. But it's bizarre to other people. It's insane. Or you can write a whole novel. Just like sit down and, you know, you write 5,000 words or 2,000 words a day or whatever. And at the end, you have a novel and you've had an idea and you've driven it all the way from the beginning to the end. You've developed all these people, these characters, these storylines, these ideas. You've developed it from beginning to end. And I can't remember what's in the fridge. If the fridge door is closed, it's like the insides don't exist. But I can drive a whole novel from beginning to end and hold it in my head, which is just very strange to me because that actually doesn't exist. And I know it. But are there pickles? Are there cucumbers? Is there... I just remember there's asparagus. I gotta eat the asparagus. I just put a whiteboard on my freezer because I don't ever know what's in the fridge. And I have to write asparagus on the whiteboard. So we have certain competencies. And I guess what I've just implied and sort of said is they also come with certain blind spots. There are certain things we are bad at. And there are certain things these characters are bad at. Like certain things will trigger them. Which is wonderful when you're developing a character, if you can give them some hair triggers, some certain things that will set them off, or certain things they're really wonderful at, like Elliot is wonderful with children. Parker, not so good with children. But Elliot, they just flock straight. You can see it on screen, how these children are just like, wow, look at him, he's amazing. And it's just, it's actually happening. It's not scripted, although they think they scripted in, but it happens in real life also. That they can just do certain things, and they just can't do other certain things. And as you're developing character, it is so important to do all that. It's so important to give them layers. Not just competence, but incompetence. What can't they do? What can't they do to save their lives? Okay, give somebody... I'm the only person in the room besides the dog, so I'll use myself as an example. I'm very claustrophobic. I cannot do certain things, okay? I just can't. I can't begin to deal with it. It became a problem fixing cars because getting underneath a car used to be fine. It was a lot easier when I was smaller and the cars were higher up. Now they don't give you much clearance. They really don't. Like, there was plenty of room under a Volkswagen bus, but there is no room under my Pathfinder. I cannot get under a car now. Even when there's room, I can't get under the car. I can't do it. I can't have 2 tons of vehicle over me. And I'm not even talking about on a jack. You should never get under a car that's on a jack. It can fall off and kill you. It's a bad idea. But I just can't. I can't do that. So I've got these strengths that I cannot use because I can't do the other side. I can't change my own oil because I can't get under the car because I get an absolute panic attack. And if you want to give somebody an incompetence, give them panic attacks because they're completely disabling. You cannot do anything else. It's like when my computer freezes up as it just did a little while ago when I was talking about fuses. So give them panic attacks. Give them blind spots. I can't recognize faces, so that's super fun. That's an interesting thing that's developed or undeveloped lately. I used to be able to. Apparently, I drove past my brother yesterday. Didn't recognize him. He texted me and said, "You just drove past me." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then I thought, I had the actual thought, how did he know it was me? Which, if you're a human... You already know how he knew it was me, because I have a face and he recognized it, but I can't recognize faces. So to me, it's like, I don't understand how anybody knows anybody. I just sort of forgot. I also don't know how you recognize cars, because all the cars look the same to me, which I think is related to all the faces looking the same to me. It's fine. It's not. But it is. It really is. It'll be okay. I mean, I'm not an elite spy, so I think it's going to work out all right. So I don't recognize my own brother. Most of the time, what happens is I see someone I think is him and it isn't. Because it works both ways. I can't tell if it's him and I can't tell if it isn't him. I'm like, generally matches the idea of him I have in my head. Shape, size, color, hair, generally, it's not him. So that's fun. So give your characters competence and give them incompetence. And then everybody needs an arc. Everybody needs an arc. And sometimes that arc is downward. Like apparently my memory and ability to recognize faces and so on. Prosopagnosia. Good times. But They need an arc. You need an arc. And this is very upsetting for me today because I was thinking about, because I tend to do this. I'll be like, back in like 2006, I was awesome and now I suck, which is stupid and not true, but it is something I think. Like I used to do all these fun things and there were people in my life and I went places and did things. And now I stay home and do nothing because I'm scared to leave the house or whatever. Also, truly not being able to recognize people does make things complicated and I get lost. And so anyway, I was having that feeling. And so I went back and I read this blog I used to write from back then. And I was like, oh no, because I was in a constant panic and everything kept going wrong. Like I read the day, I don't know how I happened upon it, but I read this day. I was looking for something else entirely. I was looking for this wonderful thing that happened. But instead I found this Friday the 13th, literally the Friday the 13th, where I got horrible news that I didn't get this amazing writing assistant job I was up for. And at the same time, my temp job would not tell me whether I was supposed to come back the next Monday. And it was like Friday at 3:30. And I was like, wait, but am I supposed to come? And they're like, well, we don't know. Stop bothering us. And the woman was so snippy with me and so rude. And finally, and I was like, but I need to know whether to go to work on Monday and you won't be open early enough for me to find out from you whether I should show up. And she was really mean about it. And finally, she hung up on me. And so, of course, I turned her in for that and got all these emails and phone calls apologizing and explaining, yes, I had a job on Monday. And no, we don't know what's wrong with that woman. And yes, she doesn't work here anymore. Then I felt bad. But she really was very rude. And there's no reason for that. So like, all I'm saying is things were rough back then. So there was a lot more going on, but it was not great. Also, there was a lot of stress in my life. Being a temp, which I guess I still am kind of, is really, really stressful and bad for you. So yep, an arc. You need an arc. Back then I thought I had an arc. I thought I had this arc. And of course it crashed and burned. It burned on that Friday the 13th a lot. And then that was the same weekend I caught this incredibly bad respiratory infection that was the beginning of the end for me living in Los Angeles. Because after that, I had to be on all these steroids. I got really sick and I never stopped being sick the whole rest of the time I lived there. And so that was sort of, what a weird moment to happen upon in this written record. And to discover like, oh, this thing I've been sort of romanticizing, kind of, it was terrible in a lot of ways. So stressful. And everything went wrong. And like Griffith Park set on fire not far from my house. And I breathed all this smoke. And that's what brought on a lot of the respiratory issues that you can't hear because I edit them out. But I can see it right now. It's like a little rough spot on the audio timeline. Rough inhale. It's terrible. And I have an inhaler in my pocket right now still because of it. So that's rough, isn't it? It wasn't really this ideal time, and it wasn't the arc I thought it was. And I switched to writing novels, which I had started long before that. I started writing novels in about 2002, and I didn't get good at it till 2017. Yeah, 2017, I wrote the first really good one, Landslide. And so there's an arc happening, but it's not that arc. It's not the arc I thought it was. Although I suppose all writing is writing. Writing is writing. And as long as you're developing your writing, you're doing it and it's happening and you're doing what you want to do, even if you think you want to do one thing and you actually want to do another thing in the end. That's still the arc. Like if you look at it from way above, you're still doing the thing. And maybe in the moment you don't see it. In this moment, I feel like I'm doing nothing and nothing's happening and nothing's working. And it's all just like a giant pause button, much like my computer that keeps freezing up. It feels like that. But it's not really, is it? Because I'm doing things and I'm making things happen. And it is something. It's not nothing. It's something. And just because I can't see it from high above doesn't mean it's nothing. So that's good for a character too, isn't it? I've been writing Summerlands a lot and it's hard. No wonder I had to write it so many times. It's a hard story to tell. And it's different this time. And I don't know. It's like I keep putting in all of these really rough elements that were there in the original. Now I'm looking at it going like, does that have to be there? We don't need to be traumatized by reading this. Like, it's bad enough when the characters are traumatized. So competence is wonderful. Competence and incompetence and weakness are all so good in characters and an arc. An arc, even if it's not the arc they think they're going on, they need to have an arc. And then I wanted to talk about commentaries. Okay, so commentaries are fascinating. With fiction, with TV and movies, you get commentaries. I should do a book commentary. What would that be like? Real time, talking in your ear while you're reading it? But I mean, it could be like footnotes or I don't know. That's a funny idea. Isn't it? Is there such a thing as a book commentary? So I love the commentary tracks. They're very fun. They're smart people telling you how they did this thing that you love to enjoy, to listen to, absorb, experience, consume. People say consume media. It's so gross. It's still there. I didn't consume it. It's still there. So pick another verb. Enjoy is better. The commentaries are so good because they give you a lot of craft, which I enjoy very much. Like, here's how you set up this shot. Here's how this works. Here's why you don't have five people, five main characters, because it makes setting them up physically a nightmare. Here's how you deal with that. Here's how you put people on two different levels. Here's how you always have movement in the background. Here's all these different things. You can tell I've listened a lot. And here's how you write a story. Here's how you break a story. Here's how you make a story compelling that plays out in only 42 minutes, which is, I never want to do that. I always want to take, 100,000 words. I want to spend some time with it. I want to make it really go deep and wide, and I want to make it hurt, of course. I want a story to be like where you're desperate. You're like, it has to happen. We have to make it work. It has to. Like, it has to be so important that it work out. And if it isn't, I feel like I've failed. So I have to make things matter. I need stakes. Stakes. I wish you could see the wind in the trees right now. Maybe you can hear it. It's beautiful. So yes, the commentaries give you more. They make every episode have more dimensions. And that is an interesting thing, isn't it? Like if you read the Icarus Triptych and then you have me in your ear going, actually this part, this is based on da 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 and da 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 da. Then every time you read it, you think, oh, it's based on da 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 da. And that can be worse. It can be worse because it's distracting. And that certainly happens to me, like with Lord of the Rings or something, where I watch it and all I can think at this certain point is, oh, he broke his toe. That's a real yell. Like, that's really distracting to me. And I don't like that. But there's no way to get rid of it, which is why it's so terrible. I can't not think that when it gets to that part. Which does not happen with Leverage, which is great. Because they don't really go, here's this part, and here's what happens, and here's this part. It's bigger. It's higher level. It's much more interesting. So commentaries are a whole thing that also leads me to literary criticism and the death of the author. Anybody want to talk about death of the author, Roland Barthes? No? Too bad. I'm about to teach literary criticism again, intro 2, beginning on Monday, so that'll be super fun. It's very, very fun to teach because it reminds me of all the different lenses you can use to look at any text. You can watch Leverage, never listen to the commentaries, and be fine. You can develop your own reading of it. There is no right answer. Do you know what I mean? There's no one right answer. There's as many right answers as there are people who watch it. That doesn't mean every answer is right, but there are a lot of right answers. There are wrong ways to read text. You can get things wrong. And I always have students yell about this where I'm like, well, you said that they went to the zoo and they didn't go to the zoo. You got it wrong, right? You got it wrong. But you can also interpret things in ways that do not make sense for what's on the page. And yeah, you know who gets to decide if you're right or wrong? Me. That's not exactly true, but it is true that there are bad faith readings of texts. And a bad faith reading of a text takes what's on the page and twists it in a way that is deliberate and deliberately, misaligns it with what's going on in the story. And so you can do it, and you shouldn't do it, because go do something else. Like, if you don't like what's on the page in this story, there's others. Go read something else. And so part of my job always ends up being explaining the meaning of a bad faith reading. And also, at the same time, saying death of the author, you get to decide what a story is about. You do, but you can be wrong. So there's that. I can say more about that later. I don't feel equipped right now. I'm a little stressed out today. Really, the construction is not doing me any favors. Like, explosions? It sounds like explosions. And I know I've never been in the trenches in World War I, but I used to have a thing called exploding head syndrome where I would hear explosions. Like, this is one of those things that happens when you're falling asleep. You can hear noises, hypnagogic, blah, blah, blah. It's a thing. It's a known phenomenon. I'm not the only one. But I would hear explosions and it would be very upsetting because they weren't happening. It's just your mind telling you things. It's like when I was seeing bright lights before I fell asleep. They weren't happening. It wasn't there. It's just your brain going like, oh no, we're gonna die. Here, have a thing that makes you not fall asleep because I don't want you to fall asleep because I think you're gonna die or something like that. It's like when you feel like you're falling and it wakes you up. It's all part of that. And so, yes, I used to hear these explosions. And so now the construction is sounds like huge explosions half a block away. It's not great for me, I gotta tell you. So that's been going on all day. Not good. And the fourth is coming up. Boom! I don't know the solution to that either. It's so loud and it's so unrelenting. And the people around here are gonna shoot. They always shoot, but they're gonna shoot even more. They love the shooting. And so that's fun. That's something else you can love about Leverage is there's almost no guns. There's almost no guns. Elliot, who's the violence guy, hates guns until this one episode where he finally uses guns, and he uses like a zillion different ones, and all it's the greatest scene you've ever seen in your life. It's just amazing. Oh my golly, it's so good. He's like sliding on his knees, leaning backwards, shooting to both sides and up above and below and back and behind and like sliding in oil. And like, it's just so over the top. It is so glorious. And if you do nothing else with yourself in regards to Leverage, please go find that scene and watch it. I bet you can get it on YouTube. It's so good. Ugh. I should have told you the name of the episode, but I can't remember it. And I have to remember the asparagus. So, yeah. Leverage. I'm going to go put the DVDs on and maybe finish reupholstering that chair so I can get it out of my living room and out of my living space, because my living space is not livable with it in the middle of it. And I don't want to do it, but I have to do it because I have to get it out of the way. I just get really tired of projects and I'm like, I don't want to do it anymore. But it doesn't go away just because I'm tired of it. It's still sitting in the middle of the living room. So I end up upstairs writing books instead. Yay. Okay, so that's Leverage. I did not begin to do it justice. Leverage is a pure joy from beginning to end. And I cannot recommend it enough. It is escapist. It is justice. It is found family. It is competence. It is Robin Hood stories. It is just delightful. And you learn terrible things about the world. And they're true. And I wish they weren't. I had a student learn about the private prisons from the private prison episode and go on to make that sort of his life's work. And so that made me feel very proud that I was able to help the world a little bit by watching TV and telling people about it. I mean, I guess that is my role, isn't it? Really, when you come down to it, that's literature professor right there. So there you go, Leverage. Long live Leverage. I have watched Leverage Redemption, but only once through. And it didn't really hit me the same way. It's a different show. But I understand there's more coming that's more like the original. I don't know. We'll see. I want to see it. I want to see all of it. I wish I had DVDs of Redemption. I don't know if they even exist, but I'll look for them. Because apparently I need to watch. Well, we know this. I don't. This is fun in a literature professor. I don't pick things up the first time. I don't necessarily follow the first time through. I have to read or watch something over and over and over before I mean, of course you should. You should study things. But it means that seeing Leverage Redemption once through isn't enough. And I need to see it again. Because, and this is again back to Columbo, when you know what happens and how it happened, then you can appreciate it much more the second time through. You appreciate Columbo figuring it out because you already know what happens. And you appreciate Leverage more when you watch the cons the second time through and you're like, okay, I know how they're going to do this and I know how this is going to work. And it's such a joy. The bottle episode is one of my very favorites. I watched that like 5 times one weekend, a couple weekends ago, like maybe a month ago. I watched that over and over again because it's so well structured and it almost runs in real time. And it's ridiculously good. And there's constantly these new challenges. And that's one thing I love. It constantly ramps up. It's not like, problem, go. It's like, problem, Oh no, problem squared. Oh no, problem cubed. Oh no. And it keeps like each, it keeps spawning new problems because they, usually it's because they solve it too well. And then things are worse because they solved it too well, which is a great way to go. So I think I have to go write books now or possibly eat asparagus and then write book. Want the asparagus. I don't know what I was thinking. I guess it looked good. I don't know. I shouldn't go to the grocery store. It would be cheaper to pay someone to bring it to me because I wouldn't get things I don't want so much. I don't know. Decisions are hard. Okay, so that's episode 9. Leverage. Competence. Commentaries. If you have any questions or concerns or would like to suggest a text for me to work on, send me an email at sacredcheesepodcast@gmail.com. I am now on Apple Podcasts, so that's very exciting for me, at least. I got so excited when I saw my own podcast on there. I was beside myself. So go to Apple Podcasts if you're an iPhone haver and rate, review, and subscribe, like they always say. I rated because, you know, why wouldn't I? But someone else should also. So go ahead and do that. Music, again, is by Shaolin Dub. More power to them. I really love that song. And I think that's it. Sacred Cheese of Life.